Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Do you remember a couple of years ago, Georgia and Auburn, who had played every year since, I don't even know what, like late 1800s, I guess. It's the Deep South's oldest rivalry, and every year the game kind of felt the same way, except in 2017, it was unlike it had ever been before. Georgia and Auburn played in November, then they played again in December. These two rivals that had more than a century's worth of history against each other all of a sudden found a way to make it feel fresh and new, just as recently as a couple of seasons ago, playing twice in the same year. I think there is some version of that that could be possible for another one of Georgia's rivals here this year, the Florida Gators. Let me see if I can explain this. This has been kind of kicking around in my head for a few days. Sometimes I don't always sleep as well as I possibly could, and part of the reason why sometimes I don't is because I get weird thoughts in my head in the middle of the night, and this is probably one of those weird thoughts that I had a few nights ago. And let me see if I can kind of lay this out in kind of an orderly, sensible way, and we'll talk about it for a couple of minutes. I think that this year, in a year in which the Big Ten's not playing, the Pac-12's not playing, we've got three of the five Power Five leagues playing, but four playoff spots available. So if you look at non-SEC teams that have a chance of making the college football playoff, obviously Clemson would be one. We've seen them win national championships, be a fixture in the playoff. I don't care, you know, how big of a Georgia fan you are, you're willing to acknowledge that Clemson's a legitimate playoff team. I would also say that playing in the ACC this year, Notre Dame is kind of one of those teams too. The Irish have been a playoff team before. The Irish will be a favorite in most of the games they play this season as an ACC member. Notre Dame obviously brings a big brand with it, so they'd get extra consideration from the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. I would say that Notre Dame is a non-SEC team that's a legitimate national championship contender. In the Big 12, I think we have two teams. Obviously, Oklahoma's been in the playoff a couple years in a row. They haven't performed very well when being in there, but they have been in the College Football Playoff. You'd have to say that at this point in time, they are a legitimate contender to make the postseason once again. The other Big 12 team that I would put in that discussion is Texas. And yes, I know there's always that joke about Texas being back and people making those predictions and having them not come true. Just to be full transparent here, I have selected the Longhorns to make my own college football playoff. I felt that way back when we thought all five Power Five leagues might be playing. I think Texas is recruited better than some people realize. I think they've been a little closer to Oklahoma than maybe, you know, some people have given them maybe some credit for. You know, obviously they've been let down against some non-ranked opponents. They've lost some games they shouldn't have. But I think that Texas is a real team this year. So those are my four teams outside the SEC that I think can make the playoff. Texas, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, and Clemson. If you force me to reach and find a few more, I start getting to teams like North Carolina, who I think is pretty good. Iowa State, who I think is pretty good. Maybe Oklahoma State, they've got a good running back. But at this point in time, I'm really reaching and grasping for straws. Legitimately, I can only name four non-SEC teams that I view as, you know, potentially authentic playoff type teams for this upcoming year, which then obviously makes it possible that more than one SEC team could make the college football playoff, something we saw happen in 2017, also bringing them on the 2011 season when Alabama played LSU for the national championship, ultimately won, even though LSU was the reigning SEC champion. We've also seen a non-conference winning team from Ohio State made the college football playoff, 2016? Penn State wins the league. Ohio State makes the college football playoff. You know, they kind of got that done there. And the one thing that you see as a pretty consistent theme, especially in the SEC, when a team that doesn't win the SEC puts itself in, you know, contention for the college football playoff, it also seems to do that without being a division winner. That's what Alabama did in 2017. So if a second SEC team makes the college football playoff this year in a season in which there aren't a ton of non-SEC teams who you really view as all that viable to get that done, to me it stands to reason that a team that doesn't win the division has a much better chance than the SEC runner-up. You know, we saw Georgia in 2018, who I think had a pretty strong case to be one of the four best teams in the country in 2018, made the SEC championship game, played Alabama very close, came up just short, and, you know, got some talking heads on TV support, but no real consideration, it would seem, of staying in that top four even after playing a close game in the SEC championship. But your best chance, I would say, of making the playoff as a non-SEC champion is to also not be a division winner either. Taking that extra loss in the SEC championship game just becomes a pretty easy way for the powers that be with the College Football Playoff Selection Committee to disqualify you from contention. So who does that leave then? If we assume for a moment that the two favorites in the division, Alabama, Georgia, reign, they end up playing for a second time in December, and we'll hold off on, you know, kind of who even wins that game for a moment. But if we put those two teams in the championship, who does that leave then as, you know, possible second SEC teams into the College Football Playoff? In the SEC West, you potentially have a few. It could be a program like Auburn, who I think is better than some people have given them credit for. It could be a program like Texas A&M, who did add Florida to its schedule, but for the most part still plays a more manageable schedule than we've seen the Aggies play in a couple of years here. Some people may say, don't disregard LSU as of yet. We'll, I guess, wait and see after all they've lost, but there are a couple of candidates for that in the SEC West. And then we get to the Florida Gators, and this kind of brings me back to where I started a moment ago, that in 2017, we saw a rivalry that had existed for a long time, Georgia and Auburn, the Deep South oldest, take on an exciting new twist when these two teams played for the second time in a season in the SEC Championship. I think there's a chance there could be a new chapter kind of open up for Georgia and Florida this upcoming season as well, because for the most part, what we have seen in recent years is that once the cocktail party is over, we, for the most part, stop talking about the loser in that game, and that loser now, the last 3 years, been the Florida Gators. 2018, 2019, Dan Mullins had them as a pretty good team, ranked in the top 10, but ultimately losing to UGA and completely inconsequential again after that. If the same thing unfolds here in 2020, these two teams meet in Jacksonville, Georgia wins again for the fourth straight year, third straight year with Dan Mullen as Florida coach, I think the results this year could actually feel a little bit different on the basis of what I just said. An SEC team that has a very good season and potentially not quite SEC division winning good, but still, you know, 9-1 maybe, still kind of hanging around there in the mix for all of this, that team could very much still be alive for the College Football Playoff. Consider this for a moment. We've already talked about the possibility that Georgia may play Alabama twice this season. We know they'll play in the regular season. There's a huge assumption that they could also play again in the SEC Championship. Have you thought about the possibility, in a year in which there are only three Power 5 leagues playing, four playoff spots available, a strong possibility that two SEC teams make the playoff? Have you thought about the chance yet that maybe Georgia has to beat Florida twice to win the national championship this year? Now, compared to who you might have to play in a normal situation, playing Florida for a second time might not be all that scary for the average Georgia fan. But it is at least something to consider here, that this rivalry that's existed for a long time and felt a certain kind of way for a long time could feel very different this upcoming season, with the possibility of multiple playoff spots being available for the SEC team. A team like Florida, if it doesn't win the division, maybe having an argument over, as I said before, if you're comparing to Oklahoma or Notre Dame, teams like that, the Florida argument might not be too bad. Could be an interesting thing to consider as we head towards all of that. All right, with that said, let me kind of shift gears here and do something else just for a moment. I want to examine more about the quarterback situation at Georgia, the ongoing competition that now seems to be between JT Daniels and Dwan Mathis to be the starter now that Jamie Newman is no longer in the mix. And one of the things that kind of hangs around when it comes to JT Daniels, he's apparently practicing, he's apparently scrimmaging, but we've been told that if tackle football were slated to take place today, or at least as recently as a few days ago, he wouldn't be eligible to play in that game. Does Kirby Smart expect that to change? He says yes. This is what he said about Daniels going back to Saturday.
I am under the assumption that's going to happen, but that is not my decision. Obviously, that's the medical decision. And you know, he's clear to practice, which for quarterbacks is unique because they're not out there getting hit every day. They're non-contact. So, you know, we expect him to be cleared by the first game, but that's not a complete certainty. I know Ron feels confident that he's far enough post-op and he's got enough strength in his leg to be in a good position to be able to play. But that's going to boil down to Ron and our doctors making that call.
I mean, listen, I assume that Daniels will eventually be healthy as well. What I also hope is that as we get closer to the start of the season, we start hearing, I'm saying this as a fan who just wants Georgia to win games, that we start hearing Smart speak in a confident way when he discusses Daniels. We're hearing this from some SEC coaches as they're talking about their own quarterbacks in competition. I'll make the comparison to some of the stuff that Nick Saban has recently said about Mac Jones. We presume there's a chance that eventually Jones is overtaken by the true freshman, Bryce Young, who's coming into that program. But as of late, Saban said some somewhat complimentary things about Jones. I'd love to hear Smart's tone about JT Daniels kind of go from pushing him to be as good as he can be to comfortable with kind of where he is as the season begins. Up to this point in time, we haven't necessarily heard that yet from Smart, but it's also fair to point out that that's pretty much the way that Smart always talks about quarterbacks. How about the other guy in this situation, Dwan Mathis? There was something in particular that Smart said about Mathis the other day that I think is pretty important in terms of handicapping his chances of eventually being in the mix to be the starting quarterback for Georgia. There was something Smart that said on Saturday that I think really matters. Let me let you hear from Smart on that topic.
The advantage that he got is that he got to go on the scout team a lot, because once he was not medically cleared, and if you remember, he wasn't really cleared to do anything until past May. So it was, we were kind of in the dark on whether or not he was going to, we had to go to like six NFL doctors to look at the scans and see the healing in his skull to be able to clear him. And during that time of last season, he was getting all the reps, you know, against the scout team, which is really helpful because you get to feel the rush. You know, you got one of the best defenses in the country coming at you with a, you know, makeshift offensive line a lot of times on the scout team. And so you feel that pressure and you get to go in there and compete. He got to take a lot of reps in regards to that, but he is in a little bit different system. So that's, you know, it's not like he's in the same system he was in last year.
I think that's really interesting when it comes to Dwan Mathis, that the assumption here is that Mathis, you know, wasn't really involved in the situation at all last year because of the brain injury. And obviously when it comes to, you know, full on tackle football, you know, Mathis probably couldn't have participated in that last year, but he was practicing by the end of the year. People have told us that. Smart himself confirming that with those words there. As a scout team quarterback going up against one of the nation's best defenses, you know, Mathis hasn't yet played in a game, but as far as being a participant in practice, he may have done some more of that than some people possibly realize, which in terms of preparing him to potentially play this season, I think the experience gained from those practices, I think it does matter for Mathis a little bit. And it almost makes me wonder if it matters enough that Smart and Georgia and offensive coordinator Todd Monken would consider playing two quarterbacks early in the year, maybe not fully splitting those reps, but at least giving Mathis a chance to contribute to this Georgia offense. I'll give you another clip here from Smart that also kind of stirs that thought in my mind of, you know, maybe even if JT Daniels is the starter, there's still potentially a role for Dwan Mathis. Let's see if you can read between the lines on this clip from Kirby Smart that leads you to the same conclusion.
Yeah, I don't know that we're getting a full read ever. We're not getting a full read on any of them. I mean, you know, Dwan steps up to scramble today, and you're having to make a determination of did he get sacked or did he not. That's really never fair. And the only way to make it fair is to make it live. And that's a tougher decision, and it's a decision that we've actually thought more about this year than we ever have before. But both JT himself, Carson, they have mobility. I mean, even JT's got some mobility with the knee brace on. But Dwan certainly is ahead of them in regards to that. So it's a hard measuring stick because you're trying to judge whether the guy was down or not down. Did he break the tackle? Did he not break the tackle? So, no, you're not getting a full exposure to what you would like. The only way you're going to get that is A, scrimmage live, or B, play a game. And the game is next in line for us outside of some other practices to get better.
Sometimes I think Kirby's comments can be a little frustrating because maybe he doesn't tell us enough about what we would like to hear, what his thought process is. In that particular case, he's being pretty candid that when you're evaluating these quarterbacks in practice, sometimes it's tough to know, would Dwan Mathis be going for a big run here? Should this be considered a sack? Which I think leads us to believe that during these scrimmages, during these practices, they're really trying to evaluate what he brings to the table from a running standpoint. Here's the honest truth. The Georgia offense last season left a lot to be desired, but there's still a lot to replace from that offense, rushing yards in particular. This group was down from where it had been in 2018, but you know, DeAndre Swift's not here anymore. There's some kind of unproven commodities at the tailback position a bit, and Georgia's got to try to find a way to get as many yards as they can. Maybe Dwan Mathis' legs do provide you a chance at some easy yards here this season. I have to admit, I'm a little concerned, speaking as a fan here for a moment, at the unsettled nature of the Georgia quarterback spot right now, but I'm also open to whatever Georgia needs to do to find yards and points, and maybe using the athleticism of Dwan Mathis to be matched with what you think may be JT Daniels' pretty comfortable in a Todd Monken-style offense. you may have to do a little bit of everything. And one way or another, I guess my assumption is at the beginning of the season, at least, the Georgia offense is still very much going to be a work in progress. A little long there off the top, but nonetheless, good to have you with us. It's Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, and good to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Huge thanks to our friends at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort for making it all possible. You know, you got two great locations there, both about a two-hour drive from Atlanta, really even a little less than that. The original Harris Cherokee Casino Resort and Harris Cherokee Valley River. These are beautiful places, great accommodation, rooms to stay in, a gaming area, and really even the same, you know, restaurant, you know, spa, you know, all of the stuff that you kind of come to expect from these great resorts still in place right now, and even better at a time in which we're all thinking about health and safety. The folks at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort have done an incredible job of making sure their facilities are very comfortable for social distancing and taking good care, giving peace of mind to the guests who stop by there. So the same great restaurants, the same great accommodations, the same great getaway it's always been, but also kind of available for you now in kind of a socially distant way. That's what Harris Cherokee Casino Resort provides. We're big fans of theirs, and we're really happy to be telling their story here on Dog Nation Daily. By the way, don't forget to check out this website. It's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. That's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. That'll get you in touch with Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. I'm going to get Mike Griffith here coming up in just a moment. Before I do that, let me also talk for a moment about something that happened on Friday. I was really entertained by Scott Cochran, the new Georgia special teams coach, visit with the media. He's got unbelievable energy. And it's kind of funny. This was a huge story during the offseason when Cochran first came over. And everything that happens since then, you know, the SEC news cycle has a tendency to spin pretty fast. Everything that happens kind of after that almost obscures what at one point in time been a really big story. So I thought it was a pretty shrewd move by Smart going back to last week to make Cochran available. And good job by Mike Griffith near the end of that discussion talking to Cochran about the decision to move away from Alabama, move to Georgia, and the idea that had he stayed at Alabama, something we've talked about on the show before, that maybe Nick Saban was going to step up, do what's right, and give Cochran a chance to advance his career. Scott Cochran took that idea head on Friday. This is pretty good stuff. Make sure you hear this.
I mean, you can use anything for motivation. To me, the question goes deeper. I think Coach Saban has my back. I worked for him for 18 years. If the position would have been open there, probably would have been a possibility. But for me, I want to work for Coach Smart. I want to work with somebody that I see eye to eye with on a lot of things. And I see the same with Coach Saban. Obviously, you know, I wouldn't be where I am without him. But with Coach Smart, I feel like there's a big emphasis on some things that I'm big on.
Listen, I think that apart from the Georgia versus Alabama stuff, I think that Scott Cochran is potentially a coaching star on the rise. I could see him doing bigger and better things even beyond just being special teams coordinator at Georgia. But in the moment we're in now, where there's this kind of cold war going on between Georgia and Alabama with more on-field action to come, I think that the presence of Cochran at Georgia continues to be a pretty big salvo for UGA against Alabama and giving folks a reminder of just what Georgia got when it got Cochran away from Tuscaloosa. That was a pretty good thing for Kirby Smart to be able to do. It was fun to hear that. By the way, if you go to the Dog Nation YouTube page, you can hear the entirety of the Scott Cochran press conference. I think you'll be really glad you did. Before we bring on Mike Griffith, let me just mention this here real quick. If you're watching on video, you see something that I'm incredibly proud of. I've got this Onward Reserve, very cool shirt on today, the red and black stripes, but the logo is one of my favorite things in the world. It's the Georgia dog with the gator in its mouth. This is a logo that Onward Reserve has the right to use here. It's one of those cool things that you get when you you check out the tremendous apparel selection that's available at Onward Reserve. So if you're watching on video, you notice the shirt that I'm wearing. A really fun thing to do, go to DogNation.com. Up the top of the page there, you can see all the stuff that's there, the Georgia-Florida stuff here. We love being Gator haters around here. Onward Reserve makes that easier. When you use the promo code DogNation, you also get 10% off your purchase. So if you're listening to podcasts and you want to see the shirt that I'm wearing, go to DogNation.com. Up the top of the page, you can see that. It'll take you right to On Reserve. You can see the really cool stuff. Use the promo code DOGNATION, of course, spelled the way it's supposed to be, DAWG, and you can get 10% off your order there on that. I love On Reserve. You know, TJ Callaway is a UGA guy. That's the founder. Not only do they have really cool UGA apparel, but as we head towards fall, they always have great, great stuff, whether it be the pullovers, the sweaters. You know, a lot of you like the outdoor activities, the hunting, the fishing. They kind of got you covered on some of that kind of stuff there as well. They like to celebrate the notion of living authentically. And as you head towards the fall, no better way to put yourself in a position to do that yourself, no matter what you have planned, than with our friends at On Reserve. So check out the website, dognation.com. There's a link to On Reserve there. Use the promo code DOGNATION. If I could recommend anything, it'd be the shirt that I'm wearing right now because I love the dog just chomping down on that gator. Check it out for yourself. Go to DOGNATION.com to find out more about that. We are fully loaded. We're already running late, which gives you an idea of just how much we have going on today's show. We're glad to have you as a part of it. Want to get more to the quarterback situation now and everything else related to UGA. Let's talk to Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we'll bring on Mike Griffith here, a little late getting to him, and I certainly apologize for that. I want to be respectful of his time. And Mike, with that in mind, I guess we'll kind of jump right into this here today. Want to get into kind of what's been ongoing with the quarterback situation, with Dwan Mathis, with JT Daniels. I admitted this to our audience before you joined us. Speaking as a fan right now, I'm a little concerned with maybe some of where this stands. I think there's a possibility that Georgia plays both these guys a little bit. They may need the extra dimension offensively that Mathis potentially provides with his legs. I think that Kirby Smart, you know, has a way of talking about this kind of stuff. You'd like to hear him, you know, grow a little more confident in how he discusses this particular topic as we head towards the first game of the season against Arkansas. I guess if you're a UGA fan, you've obviously been listening closely here, trying to, you know, massage some sources behind the scenes for information as well. Where do you think about where the quarterback competition stands at the moment?
BA, first, I got to tell you something. I got to tell you that Onward Reserve's got a sale right now on half because I've been scoping it out. I just got to tell you because I love that story.
Yeah, it's a great
story.
But
they got a really cool sale on hats right now, so let me just say that real quick.
Good to know. Thanks for the heads up on that, Mike. Appreciate that.
No, seriously, you got to say seriously. The quarterback thing is it's fascinating. It really is when you think about how it's constantly changing and you see what JT Daniels has done in a short time. I mean, here's a guy who's still not even 100%, and he's running first team and taking reps. Obviously, Kirby likes what he sees from Daniels. Dwan is a major talent, but this is new. I mean, the thing that you've got to remember about Dwan and Carson Beck is they've never played college football. And they didn't even have the benefit of going through the spring. Now, last year, Dwan got some work with the scout team, and he had some predisposed plays to run and things like that, but not a lot, really. He was really recovering, you know, into the season and didn't play real football. I mean, the last time Dwan Mathis got hit in a football game was, 2018, right? So, I mean, he hasn't played in 2 years. Carson hasn't played since the end of 2019. So Carson hasn't played in months. And JT, to be fair, JT hasn't played since the start of, you know, fall of 2019. So there's rust on all. The difference is JT Daniels has been in a pro-style system for 5 years. And I think Carson had some of that in Jacksonville, but modern-day high school is a football factory, the Trinity League. I mean, you look in the SEC right now, there's four quarterbacks from that six-team California League. There's four of those guys on SEC rosters. Okay, so, you know, JT comes from a football factory. He's got a full season under his belt. He's familiar with pro style. Obviously, there was something Monken liked about him when they signed him and something he liked about Monken. So you've kind of got a guy that's kind of the hand-picked guy of your new offensive coordinator. It's pretty clear to me he's had shoulders above the rest once he's cleared from the knee. Now, your point, you better believe they're going to play some Dwan Mathis and Carson Beck because it's a 10-game SEC season. And if anybody knows what a number two quarterback can do to a defense, it's Kirby Smart.
So a lot to unpack there. Let me do one thing on Mathis, then I want to do a good bit more on JT Daniels. You mentioned that Mathis hasn't played, and that's obviously one of the knocks against him. But based on some of the people that I've talked to and based on what Smart himself said a moment ago, I do think Mathis practiced more last year near the end of the season than some people realize. And I'm not telling you that practice alone is enough to prepare you for the following season, but in terms of just seeing what a very good defense looks like as scout team quarterback, I do think Mathis may have gotten a little bit more of that near the end of last year than maybe some people realize.
He did. He did. But I don't think that's where the growth is needed for Juwan. You know, we start getting into the minutiae of quarterbacking, right? And this is where some people, you know, their eyes kind of gloss over. You know, when we say game manager, what does that mean? Nothing. Well, no, actually, it means a lot. It's how you get into the NFL. It's why Deshaun Watson is a superstar quarterback, and Josh Dobbs, I covered at Tennessee, is, you know, just grasping to stay on the roster. You look at Josh Dobbs, okay? When we talk about Dwan Mathis and Dwan's skills, it reminds me a lot of Josh, because Josh Dobbs was a guy who had a big arm. Y'all saw that between the hedges. But an unbelievable runner, a great leader. And that was a finished product. Dwan, you know, Josh should have probably been the 2016 SEC Player of the Year. But why isn't he a starting quarterback in the NFL? Well, it's the offense. It did involve all these intricate things. All these things. All this protection and pre-snap read and getting through your progressions. And I know some Georgia fans are like, well, why can't you just make it simple? Well, because it takes away the advantage that the quarterback has of always putting you in the right play. Instead of beating you with his feet or beating you with his athleticism, he's beating you with the pre-snap read. He's beating you by finding the matchup before the ball's even snapped. And B.A., this is where I always go back to the best answer I ever heard from Jake Fromm, who was most of the time pretty boring and full of cliches. But at the combine, I said, Jake, what do you tell people that say you're slow and you can't get out of trouble? He says, I get out of trouble before I get in trouble with the pre-snap read. And that's where Georgia wants to get. They want to get to the point where when that quarterback goes to the line of scrimmage, just by reading the defense, just by understanding where the matchups are, he already has a notion of where the play is going to be made. He knows where the danger is coming from, right? He doesn't have to react because he's proactive before the snap. There's a huge value to that. Now, how quickly can Carson and Dwan learn this? That's the question. And if something should happen to JT, what's plan B? Can you simplify? Do you shrink the package for Carson and Dwan? Because they can't run all the stuff that a guy like JT Daniels can at this stage of his career.
So here's where I am on JT Daniels. I fully expect him to be the starter. I guess I'm just not quite so sure how effective he's going to be once he starts. First of all, because this was a Georgia offense a year ago that left a lot to be desired. So you got some leftover stuff when it comes to that. I would say that Daniels' results in his year at USC as starter were probably mixed at best. He was young, and that was a couple of years ago for a team that wasn't very good. So there's some mitigating factors there. I'm a lot more confident that Daniels starts than I am how he plays once he does start, how effective he'll be at leading this Georgia offense this season. I have to admit, when it comes to that, I don't really have a sense of just how good offensively Georgia's going to have the capability of being this season. And as a fan, I had to say, I got some concerns right now. Where are you on some of that?
I agree with you. I agree 100% because it goes back to something that you and I have talked about back and forth for the last year. When you run this style of offense, you're dependent on those other guys, right? A flare pass to Clyde Edwards-Helaire is different than a flare pass to the Navy running back. Same play, same X and O, same matchup. It comes down to playmakers. Do you have the receivers? You can have the best quarterback in the world with those pre-snap reads, but if nobody's open, what's he going to do? Well, that's when you go, well, that's when you'd like to have a guy with mobility. Well, if the guy's mobility, you know, maybe he can't get to the third opener. You know, it's yin and yang here, but it's so dependent on what do these receivers do. Do they make the right read? Okay, flashback, South Carolina, Matt Landers turns one way, Jake Fromm throws the other, interception, right? You know, if Landers can't read the leverage the same way Jake Fromm does, the whole thing goes up in smoke. If your receivers can't make those reads, but you would hope at this point, you know, this is Cortez Ankt, is what, third year with some of these guys? I think at some point, and from what I'm hearing, they're doing better. You know, obviously George Pickens is an incredible talent. Nobody's going to single. I say nobody, but very few times is George going to be single and somebody cover him. Okay, they're going to have to double him. So right there is a big advantage. Your other guys got to win one-on-one. Can Kyaris Jackson win his one-on-one? Can Matt Landers win his one-on-one? Can Demetrius Robinson catch the ball? When will Trey McKitty be healthy again? These are the questions. How quickly can Jermaine Burton recover, get up to speed? Can Justin Robinson continue to impress? These are the questions that are going to determine just how good this offense can be. I think you've got the trigger, and I think the offensive line is firm. But I've got questions about your receiving core.
Well, speaking of that, one of the guys that I would assume was going to be a part of this receiving core because of the fact that Georgia just needs reliable pass-catching targets is Trey McKitty, the tight end. I know you've written about this at DogNation.com. There have been a number of reports that McKitty, dealing with an injury, may not be able to play week one against Arkansas. And, Mike, I do view this as a pretty sizable loss for Georgia. As I said before, McKitty's a guy that I expect to be a pretty big part of this offense. And I do think the job of just finding enough yards and points, Arkansas is not a very good team, so maybe that's a factor here as well. But just in terms of being the best you can be offensively, I think McKitty's a part of that equation. So, I'm definitely paying close attention to the health news when it comes to McKitty, and what we've gotten thus far as of late, at least for the beginning of the season, hasn't been too good.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. The news that he had an arthroscopic procedure yesterday, typically the window on that 3 to 5 weeks, he's probably out the opener. I would guess they hold him out against Arkansas. He's darn near washed. There's a reason he went out and got this big guy. And he had a nice catch in the scrimmage, I was told. He's doing okay. He's lost some weight. He came in at 273. They wanted him to drop 10. He looks good, but again, it gets back to what can he handle? What can he handle? And tight end's a tough spot. That's arguably the toughest, next to quarterback, arguably the toughest spot to play on offense because you're asked to block, you're asked to route, you're asked to get passes, run after the catch, know the whole offense, move around a lot of places. So what can you do with Darnell right away? And then what about the guys behind him? Rylan Godey? I've heard he's made some plays, right? Maybe there's a budding star in the ranks. You've recruited well. And it's time for some of these names to emerge. I think your concerns are very well-founded. I think this is real. I'm with you. Even if JT Daniels makes the right read and can throw a guy open, does the guy make the play on the ball? Can he get open? Can he make the play on the ball? Will he run the right route? Will he control his emotions? The receiving core to me is the flashing red light.
I think, and we'll finish with this topic, I think one of the really fun names to talk about when you head towards the start of the season for Georgia is James Cook. Now, listen, obviously, there's been some kind of unrequited, potential when it comes to Cook over the last couple of seasons, but I still have my eye on him in a really big way this year. And the one thing I've kind of grown in my opinion on is that this is more than just a guy that you can throw the ball to because he's always kind of felt like a running back that was a little bit like a receiver. The photos that I've seen from Cook make him look like he's in pretty good physical condition, and the idea that he could still be used as a traditional running back and maybe in tandem along with Zamir White. We know Kirby likes to use those running back tandems at least most of the years that he's been at Georgia. The possibility that James Cook not only has a big year, but has it as something that feels a little bit more like a traditional tailback, a traditional running back. I guess I've still got my eye on that as a pretty big possibility for Cook this year, especially on, kind of some of the early buzz that seems to exist about him, and there's no shortage of that on the internet. Would you agree? I know you wrote about Cook the other day.
Yeah, I think James Cook is going to be the central figure in the offense. I think he's going to be the guy. If I was drafting a college fantasy football team, James Cook would be a guy to have real high on the list. He run the ball, catch the ball, maybe involved in the return game. This is James Cook's contract year. I mean, they need James Cook to be the guy. They need a Reggie Bush kind of year out of James Cook. And I'm referring to USC days, but I think James Cook is the guy. I think Zamir White is your pounder between the tackles. I think this is a kind of a thunder and lightning look. And I know that Zamir's been working on the pass catch. He can do some things out of the backfield too. But James is really a guy that I think Georgia can really count on. I think they will count on. I think he's had a great offseason, a little embarrassing off-field incident there in December or January. But I think he's put that behind him. He worked hard this offseason with his older brother. I think he's going pro after this year.
And I think Cook is going to be the dude. I really do. I think he's the guy. And you know, you need to get Kenny McIntosh needs to get up speed. Right? He got dinged up a little bit. Camp. Nothing sounds serious. But Kendall Milton's had a hamstring. So right now, you know, Zamir White and Cook right now are, you know, 1A and 1B. But I think Cook, with that ability to catch the ball, you know, talking earlier about those receivers and what can they do, I don't think he's going to be a bad option. And I think you're on to something there.
Yeah, it should be fun to see. Mike, really good coverage from you at DogNation.com. Get a fun interview today. We'll hear from Georgia running backs coach Dale McGee. You can see the full press conference on the Dog Nation video channels at some point in time. And I know Mike will have some good coverage of all of that there as well. So pretty good stuff coming down the pipe here on the site here very soon. Mike, thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Really appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to getting a chance to talk to you really soon here.
Thanks, BA. Talk later, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, so I think that James Cook's a very interesting figure on this team. And I guess just to quickly put a bow on all of this, I think that as Cook looks for a chance to make some money at the next level, obviously we know he's got a certain kind of skill set, right? We know that he's pretty good at catching the football. We know he brings some elusiveness, some athleticism. But the most money he can possibly make also requires him proving he can be a tailback as well. He's got obviously got a brother who's a successful NFL running back. Proving that he can be also a guy that can run between the tackles, I think, is a big part of that for James Cook this season. I expect him to kind of grow there in that regard. SEC Through coming up, a bunch of SEC stories to get through. We'll rattle through quickly. Before that, let me remind you, it's Before the Hedges presented by Kroger tonight, 8 p.m. Still a relatively new time for that, so mark that down, 8 p.m. tonight on the Dog Nation video channels. It's all brought to you by our friends at Kroger, the latest UGA recruiting news. Something else that Kroger brings for you as we head towards flu season, Kroger's got you covered with flu shots. We all are thinking health and safety right now as we head towards the flu season. Those feelings and that desire to be as health and safe as we possibly can, they don't change. So make sure you get that flu shot. It's actually free with most of insurance providers. So if you go to Kroger.com/flu, you can learn more about that. It's Kroger.com/flu, and you can get your appointment set up today to go and take care of all of that. All right, a bunch to get to as part of our SEC Through. Let me start with five-star linebacker Smile Mondon, who I reckon is about as difficult to read as any elite prospect has been in the last few years. I don't know that Georgia fans feel great about this recruitment, but if you check some of the other message boards, Auburn in particular, I don't know that Auburn fans always feel great about this necessarily either. I guess we just don't really know as of yet. I did see from Mondon on Twitter within the last 24 hours that he's going to put out the call for a videographer. You know, sometimes this means commitment video. Sometimes maybe it doesn't. Maybe he's just got a message that he wants to get out there. But he is kind of calling for the videographer here. Could possibly mean that Mondon's getting ready to make some sort of decision, some sort of announcement. Possibly that means a commitment here. As I said before, I don't know that Georgia fans feel great about Smile Mondon's recruitment at the moment. This is one that maybe you feel like Georgia would have already won. The fact that it continues on into the year like this makes you wonder about it a bit. But the Mondon story that's out there right now is he's seeking a videographer for something. Sometimes that means commitment video. We will see how it goes. Speaking of Auburn, you know, they've dealt with some COVID challenges as of late. I know that Tennessee had to miss its scrimmage on Saturday, turned the scrimmage into a regular practice. I think the number was like 40-something guys that were not available to practice. Some of those were positive COVID tests. Some of those were just quarantines because they came in contact with the guys that tested positive. You know, I've been asked how I feel about this, what all this means, and I guess the only thing I'm going to lean on is this. We've seen the same thing with like some of the cancellations. I know that Baylor and Louisiana Tech were supposed to play this weekend. Now they're not. You know, those are not Power 5 versus Power 5 games. We always knew the lesser schools were going to have trouble with this, and for the SEC, one of the smart things they did was, while practices themselves are limited, the number of scrimmages you have to a degree are somewhat limited as well, the length of time before the start of the season was intentionally made long so you could have a little bit more of an on-ramp. So I'm going to continue to kind of lean on that coaches, I believe, have been comfortable canceling scrimmages, or in Auburn's case, earlier canceling practices. I think they've been comfortable to do that because they know they've got the dates to play with. Now, is it possible this impacts their preparation for the upcoming season? It's certainly a possibility, but I haven't seen anything yet I'm all that worried about as of late. did see this very interesting coming out of South Carolina, where Colin Hill, who I believe is the recent transfer from Colorado State, where Mike Bobo is also offensive coordinator. There are some reports coming out of Columbia that Hill, not Collins Hill, the Georgia high school, but Colin Hill may be slated to win the starting quarterback job over Ryan Helensky. This was a surprise to me reading some of the reports coming out of Columbia. Maybe not super surprising to people who follow that program pretty closely, but it is an example of teams being willing to do something unorthodox if they feel like benefits them. Helensky was a fairly big recruit when the Gamecocks won that recruiting battle, but with Bobo coming in as offensive coordinator, he wants his guy willing to do something unorthodox to get there. You've also, I guess you'll couple this story with some of the stuff that's been out there as of late about Mike Bobo saying they're going into a huddle this year. They're not going to play as much no huddle. It certainly seems like South Carolina's got some concerns about its offensive personnel right now. The Marshawn Lloyd injury only makes that more true. So, you know, Bobo, I think, wants to be an impactful offensive coordinator. I guess the question in Columbia is, do they have the horses to get that done? A couple other SEC through stories to get to here for a moment. I think the very opposite situation may be going on at Tennessee. I saw some quotes recently from Tennessee quarterback Jared Garantano where he spoke about how confident and comfortable he's feeling getting ready to go into year two working with Jim Chaney. Now, listen, I'm not reading every piece of Tennessee news that's out there, but the best that I can tell, as of right now, you're hearing very little coming out of Knoxville about Harrison Bailey eventually emerging as a freshman or Brian Maurer or anybody else. It seems like this job belongs to Garantano for the moment here. It seems like they've fairly well pegged him there in that spot. Now, I'll remind you about this at Georgia. Jim Chaney is an offensive coordinator, much better year two than he was year one. Jake Fromm working with Jim Chaney as offensive coordinator, much more comfortable in year two in 2018 than he had been as a true freshman, admittedly, going back to 2017, that we do see Chaney seemingly get better year over year. I don't think the Tennessee's a very good team. I think they're going to struggle to even get 500 in an all-SEC schedule here this year. They do play Florida at the end of the season, and as I said before, that game may matter for playoff implications, even if Florida doesn't win the SEC East. But Chaney working with Garantano, making something of the Tennessee offense, even with unproven running backs and a lot to replace at wide receiver, that Garantano-Chaney combination may be worth paying attention to. And then finally, I'll mention this here very quickly. When Mike Griffith was with us a moment ago, he mentioned the five-star tight end that Georgia signed as part of the 2020 class, Darnell Washington. Remains to be seen what Washington will do this year. Georgia, obviously, expectations are high because he was a really fun recruit, incredible athlete, one of the most unique-looking players you'll ever see. The other guy that was kind of talked about in the same vein with Washington was a Rick Gilbert from Marietta, Georgia. That's a guy that I probably liked as much as any recruit we've talked about in really quite some time over the last couple of cycles, at least. The early buzz coming out of Baton Rouge is that a Rick Gilbert is doing very, very well in those preseason practices. And I guess at this point in time, I expect a Rick Gilbert to be a big part of the LSU offense. I'm also starting to be of the belief that maybe there's been so much talk about what LSU has lost. They've gone from being an overrated team to now being slightly an underrated team. They're still going to be a favorite in at least, I would say, seven games they play this season. Still a lot of young talent there. Gilbert is an example of that. So for Georgia fans who remember Gilbert from the recruiting trail, you may be seeing a lot of him on SEC highlight reels this fall. Expectations are that he's been a big part of the story for LSU so far this season. And we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, let's also get ready to roll into what is going to be an incredible football weekend here with some real live, you know, Power 5 opponents playing. First Power 5 opponent of the season. Game of the season comes up Thursday when Miami takes on UAB. More games coming after that. It's NFL action with the season kickoff on Thursday, then a full slate coming up on Sunday. Let's do a preview of the football we'll see this weekend ahead of Georgia getting going a couple of weeks from now, as a part of our MyBookie Best Bets. And I want to make a few cases for a few of these teams here this weekend when it comes to the MyBookie Best Bets. So let's go ahead and show that. We'll start on the college side here first. I mentioned before that I only think that there are four non-SEC teams who could make the playoff, two from the ACC, Notre Dame, and Clemson. If you force me to start thinking about another, North Carolina is one of the teams that I would think about. They get a chance to host Syracuse on Saturday as 22.5-point favorites. Sam Howell, I believe, is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. That was true when the other leagues were also playing. This is the kind of game where I look to see Mac Brown put up a big number, 22.5-point favorites. I like UNC to try to pour it on Syracuse on Saturday. Game of the weekend may be Louisiana Lafayette and Iowa State. Iowa State's another one of those non-SEC teams that can make some noise. I think Louisiana is better than Syracuse. I could see this game being closer. Watch out for the underdog keeping that a little close. Florida State starts the Mike Norvell era. Georgia Tech's terrible. I expect the Seminoles try to look good in the season opener for their new coach. Wake Forest is at home versus Clemson. This is college game day, by the way. 33-point underdog is Wake Forest. They've had Jamie Newman transfer, Sage Surratt opt out. I'm not even sure they even have any players left over. So I don't quite know if they have the ability to keep it close with Clemson or not. But that is where game day is located coming up here this weekend. And then finally, this from the NFL, because the one thing that we've learned here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cheer Casino Resort, when you want the inside track on who's going to win NFL games, I'm the guy that you turn to. I like three games in the NFL this weekend. I think the Browns were incredibly overrated a year ago. The hype is almost totally gone, and now I see real value with Cleveland. They go on the road as an 8-point underdog, week one. Give me Nick Chubb and the Browns, keeping that one closer than the experts think. This is a total sucker play, I'll admit, but I'm also on the Bucs on the road at New Orleans. Saints 3.5-point favorite there. That half point looms big time to me. Watch that one to come down, especially if you like Tampa Bay. I don't think New Orleans is very good this year. I think the Tampa, adding Leonard Fournette, can't hurt. I like the Tampa Bay Bucs. And then finally this, value play with the Giants, a home underdog against the Steelers. Watch them to keep it close there as well. That is your MyBookie best bets. And as we wrap up here, I'll also say, make sure you check out our friends at MyBookie. You want to get some excitement going down as you head towards the start of the year. It's winning season at MyBookie. That means you get a big first deposit bonus. You can double your initial deposit. New players get up $1,000. It's really, really good deal there. But you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION to take advantage of that. DOGNATION, the promo code to take advantage. Simply find MyBookie online. Do the search there in your search engine. The internet will do the work for you. Then when you get there, big first deposit bonus, double your initial deposit. When you use the promo code DOGNATION, you play, you win, you get paid at MyBookie. It is simple as that. And we'll do the MyBookie best bets each and every week here on Dog Nation Daily. And look forward to doing a whole lot more of that. Something else we enjoy doing as well, how about our Gator Hater Updater? 1,411 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That's good news. Y'all have a good day. We'll see you back here tomorrow.